Welcome to Share Talk, the only podcast where investors come first.
Today I'm talking to Nigel Theobald, CEO of N4 Pharma, which has developed Nuvec, a unique non-viral delivery system for vaccines and cancer treatments. Hi Nigel, how are you?
Good to talk to you, very well, thanks.
That's great. There's a lot of news that we're waiting on for the company. So what I wanted to do is to take the opportunity and ask some of the questions shareholders have about decisions that were made and what the thought process is for the long term. So I think I'll start us off with the first question, and I'll talk about University of Queensland. So
yeah,
how does that relationship work with N4 Pharma?
So we've got an exclusive license from UQ, the University of Queensland, and it's for their patent around both the novel silica nanoparticle itself and how to make them. And what then happens is we license back some elements of that that patent that we're not really interested in using, such as things like pesticides and food antibiotics. And we give the rights back to them. And then ultimately what happens is we will pay them a license fee, which is a percentage of our income, once we start earning royalties ourselves from our commercial collaborations. But also, as well as the license, we work quite closely with the guys at UQ because they've got an intimate knowledge of Nuvec. And, you know, occasionally we will engage with them from time to time as a contract research organization. You hear me call that? They call them CROs to undertake specific studies for us.
I mean, that's fairly interesting, that sort of working relationship with them. Would they be involved if any licensing agreements that you were going to make in the future or anything like that? Do they come to the table with that?
No, they don't. No. It's 100% down to us. It's basically called a sub-licensing clause in there that, you know, we have the rights to sub-license onto others, and then we pay them a percentage of what we earn.
All right, let's talk about Evotec and why they were chosen to perform some of the studies that we're waiting the news on.
Yeah, well, Evotec are a massive CRO, and they've got an excellent reputation. And we started working with them on some of our early projects, so We were really impressed with how they work. So they were a logical choice for us to continue to work with as a CRO because they can bring lots of different expertise from across their organization to any work that we want to do. But, you know, we remain free to work with other CROs should we choose. And we have worked with a variety of them in the past, you know, such as people like UQ as well.
Okay. And from what I understand, there's the studies that they're doing at the moment that we're waiting the results on. There's the three different objectives, determining the antibody production, exploring the dose relationship to discover the minimum and maximum plasmid dose required, and also about confirming activity is retained after freeze drying and reconstitution. Do we have to wait for all three of those results to come through, or are they doing it in one go? How's it working there?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because a lot of that work has been done by different CROs. They're not all being done by one. So that gives us, you know, it's part of that flexibility. But as you mentioned in the question, because there's so many different aspects to it, and it's not just being done in one study, you know, we will release updates as soon as we get what we would say meaningful results, which can be very clearly interpreted. But, you know, that means that if some results mean we need to wait for other aspects of that work to really, you know, get a meaningful interpretation, then we will, you know, obviously wait for those other results before announcing anything, because it's really important when you're doing R&D that you look at all the data and all the findings, not just focus on any one particular aspect of one particular study. And we want to be sure that, you know, one result that's viewed in isolation doesn't distort the overall picture and success of the project. You know, there is a danger that you can just look at one aspect of one particular study and people can get carried away with it positively or negatively. But it's, you know, without other aspects pulling all together, it's just, you know, you can't interpret that result.
And with the involvement with the CROs, is it all hands off, or do you actually have any input or feedback about how things have been done?
Well, we've got a very close working relationship with our CROs, particularly with the Evotec team, and the M4 team have regular updates with them to discuss all aspects of the study. So, you know, in particular, the study is scoped out in a very collaborative way. So N4 determines all the different arms and the variables that we want to see in the studies. And once the study is actually in progress, then the M4 team keep a very close eye on the work as it moves to make sure that the most meaningful outcome is achieved. Things happen during the course of the studies that require that sort of iterative. So it's not just a case of hand it over and they come back at the end. We will know, if
Involved in the process, at least, yeah.
yeah. So if they're doing something that we're not quite comfortable with, then we can discuss that as we go. And if they get a very early finding that might means a tweak or two here, then we can get involved early to make sure that we tweak it the right way.
And are we still on track for the first half of this year?
Yeah, very much so.
Great. Let's talk about the oral and oncology applications. Nanomerics. Why them?
Well, we're using nanomerics to do Nuvec formulation work and oncology work, but they're not part of the, just to be clear, they're not part of the oral investigation work that we're doing. The initial oral work is being scoped and managed by the N4 team using different CROs that they choose to work with. But nanomerics have got a very strong background in oncology. They've been working in that for years with their own unique delivery system, and they bring huge expertise in the oncology area. So choosing them to evaluate Nuvec in that field was pretty much a no-brainer for us.
I think that was going to be my follow-up question there. Is this a new path for them? But it sounds like it's not. They've got background there.
No, exactly. So they'll know all the different things that need to do to make sure that we evaluate it at its early potential, because they've been there and done that themselves with their own systems.
Right. Okay, and I think you described it previously in some announcements that that's in its early stages, that work. Is there anything we expect to see this year on it?
I'm hope so. Yeah, I think we should make, we'd hope to make good progress on both aspects, both, the oral and the oncology work in 2021. But as you say, yes, it is earlier stage research. So anything we do on that will be showing its potential rather than showing it absolutely works, cut dried, end of story. So we have to just keep moving it forward so that we can get further learnings.
Okay. Now, here's a, I think, a good question is of all the current work streams in play with Nuvec, what do you think is the most beneficial from a commercial perspective?
Well, good question. And the key thing for me in Nuvec is that it's a delivery system that's got potential in many different applications, which is, both good and also poses us some issues, because any successful application of Nuvec in any one of those areas is going to be hugely value creating for N4. So the key is making sure that the work that we do shows a clear commercial benefit. And that's, what we've been focused on. And our most advanced work so far has been looking at Nuvec as an injectable vaccine delivery system for DNA and RNA. And given the current focus of the world on such vaccines, that's something that we were clearly pretty, we were very right to focus on that. But as we learn across all the other applications, we're going to get a much clearer perspective on the precise commercial opportunities that of each one, and then which ones we can then focus on and why. Give you a big insight. We're very keen on exploring fully the fact that we can load dry DNA onto our particle, keep it stored, and then reconstitute it without the need for any refrigeration. And the fact that Nuvec is very simple and easy to make and very scalable. These are all aspects of vaccine effectiveness that some of the vaccines out there are struggling at the moment. So that will give us a very clear opportunity to talk to people about some very obvious commercial benefits that Nuvec brings in that particular field. So we'll be looking to try and find the real commercial benefits in the other fields as well, to help us understand what the real commercial perspective would be. And a lot of that is going to be very iterative. So, you know, a lot of it's based on the discussions and results that we have. So when we talk about to potential users and collaborators, they will ask us questions that will help us determine the work that we need to do in order to make it look more attractive to sign on the dotted line.
Yeah, and I suppose it's not just one sort of beneficial thing. It's certainly with different aspects where it could benefit different companies in different ways. I know, like, for example, with Pfizer, where their vaccine's hard to get into to the Indian market because of the storage of it. It's minus 70 degrees, I think it is, and things like that.
Absolutely, without a doubt. And you know, a year ago, we were looking at the market thinking, well, what is the real commercial point of difference here? But now a year on, when you see for the first time ever, now that DNA and RNA vaccines are on the market, you can begin to see that they are effective. You know, they have very good vaccine efficacy. They really do work, but they do struggle in some of the other aspects. Because 12 years ago, the only, you know, lipid nanoparticles as a delivery system for RNA vaccines were only being done on such small quantities. They'd never in their wildest dreams thought about the volumes that they'd need to make. And so as a consequence, they're struggling to make lipid nanoparticles. So we now know some of the sort of key commercial points, that the triggers that we can focus on, which maybe 12 months ago we were trying to estimate. But, you know, now we know what they are because they're actually on the market.
Okay, let's talk about the patents then. We saw the news on the European Patent Office intending to grant the patents, and I think it goes within each country individually within the EU that they do it as well. But where are we with the other worldwide patent applications?
So for the UQ patent, we've had notification from Australia that that's also going to proceed to grant. We're in advanced discussion, so we're involved in the patent discussions as it goes through the countries because of the license that we have, and we're in fairly advanced discussions with the US examiners. So we're pretty, that's a big market, and we're hopeful that there's going to be some news there soon. And then you've got China, India, Japan, and Canada that are all still going through the national phase examination process, and they could pop up at any time, but they're still being examined. So we haven't had detailed conversations with the examiners yet. But we've also got other patents ourselves that we own. And these patents build on the original UQ patent that we've licensed. And these are all at various different stages of development. So that's no point going into each one of them. But as we progress the work, we can decide which of those are going to have the most commercial benefit and therefore which of those patents we need to prioritize and potentially file further patents as well.
Cool. Let's talk about the business model then for InfoPharma. I mean, certainly you got on your website where you're talking about licensing agreements. So that's one of the objective, is to enter licensing agreements for Nuvec for any potential collaboration. So what do you think is the best approach to be aiming for?
So, yeah, obviously we've taken the approach that what we need to do at the moment, we need to generate data for Nuvec that showcases how it works generally so that it can attract the interest of potential collaborators. And that's what we've been doing to date. And we've generated a lot of data using what we call generic DNA plasmids, things like ovalbumin, we call it OVA. And we've, again, focused on injectable delivery. And we're now using the SARS-CoV plasmid from the NIH to add to that data. So it's real-time data, but it's still reasonably generic data because it's around how does that plasmid work. Along with the work that we're doing on how Nuvec disperses, how it's formulated, how Nuvec behaves once it enters the cell. That's, again, very important for potential collaborators. They need to know not only that it works, but how does it work? Which particular cells does it get into? Which cells is it harder to get into? All these different aspects of where it goes once it's in the body. They're all key insights for potential collaborators. So we're doing a lot of that work, but then once we have that data, the work doesn't really just stop there. Because if someone's interested in working with Nuvec, that they're going to want to do some very early exploratory testing themselves on how Nuvec basically behaves with their own DNA or their own piece of mRNA. You know, for example, does it bind as well to their DNA as our generic data has shown? And can they disperse it? And can that dispersion be maintained at different doses with Nuvec and their plasmid? And also, you know, is it going to transfect in vitro or in vivo? So these little early tests are going to be, they're pretty crucial for a potential collaborator to get confidence that Nuvec's going to work for them. So whilst the generic data is encouraging, they're going to still want to do that. And that type of work would typically be undertaken before a full collaboration licensing agreement was entered into.
Well, that's the question I've got, is if you had a collaborator who wants to get involved and do the testing with their own products using Nuvec as a delivery system, would we enter a discussion where it'd be something like, well, we want to lump sum up front? Because I mean, my worry would be you're going to go into a six-month study of it, but who's fronting the cost for that? Would we agree with them that they, you know, if they're going to take it in-house basically and try it out that way, are they going to pay for that? Or is it going to be some sort of pre-licensing thing?
Yeah, no, I think so. Yeah, I think, you know, I think the realistically where we are in the market, we'd have to do some early collaborative testing that, you know, we would have to fund them front as a, if it was particularly expensive work, I'm sure, you know, we would get them to pay for it, but probably not under a full license. But for the, you know, if we get them to hand over, you know, millions of pounds as an upfront license fee, they've got to know that it's going to work with their system. But the sort of work that we're doing doesn't take too long and isn't, you know, dramatically expensive. It literally things like making sure that it still binds, making sure that we get the right dispersion, we can get the doses working for them. All that sort of very early screening work. Well, then, you know, should they allow us to then move in up front and sign a license payments, which would involve then upfront payments, milestone payments as they go through the program, and ultimately product royalties. And I suppose once we've done two or three of those, sort of, you know, working with people, we'll probably then not have to do many more, because it's all really about, because if we've shown it works with plasmid for one company and a plasmid for another company, then you're going to be pretty sure it's going to work for the third company or the fourth company, yeah? But the first one or two, we've got to do a little bit more background work to build confidence, I think.
Yeah, I think that was going to be my other question about what's the ideal scenario for InfoPharma with license agreements. So I take it we're not just going to have someone come in and want exclusive rights. It's a case of you want multiple companies.
Yes, that's right. So, you know, ideally we're going to want to have, because it's got many different applications as well, but, you know, even in a particular application such as injectable vaccines, you know, we'd want to have numerous licensing agreements for different disease areas. But, you know, if someone came along and wanted to actually, you know, offer, you know, get an exclusive license, then we'll talk, as long as they're prepared to pay for what we see as the value of the technology, then we'll consider it. But, you know, I suspect it will be multiple, numerous licenses.
Great. Last question I'm going to ask, and that's about the challenges we're facing with lockdown restrictions around the world. How is that affecting the company?
A little bit. So some of the restrictions have inevitably led to delays in our research, but nothing, you know, nothing material. So, you know, for example, we had a delay getting our COVID plasmid out to Australia just before Christmas due to strict import restrictions that the Australian government imposed. And that meant we couldn't start our MUVO work before Christmas. So that's led to a delay to that. So we've had to wait till the new year before we could actually start that work. And, you know, some of our labs have had some staff shortages. So work that we maybe have planned for 5 or 6 weeks might take 8 or 9 weeks. You know, it's that sort of an impact. But, you know, we're managing to, you know, we're managing those delays to ensure that our programs continue to move forward. Maybe just slightly slower than we would like, but that is the world of COVID at the moment.
Yeah. Great. Nigel, thank you for taking the time. And the podcast will be available, obviously, in ShareTalk. People can have a listen to this, the shareholders. And I think, like many of them, we look forward to news in the future.
Excellent. Well, thank you for your time, Robin. Thank you for organising this. I appreciate the time.
Thank you for listening. Remember to visit our website for more news and other podcasts at www.share-talk.com.